Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 27th. Chevron Vice President says, region powers world. Executive urges industry teamwork in order to meet production forecast. The story was written by Mella McEwen. For all the talk of eliminating fossil fuels and turning to carbon-free energy sources, oil and natural gas are still vital to the world. Quote, "What we do matters," Ryder Booth, Vice President, Mid-Continent Business Unit with Chevron North America, said. Addressing the Midland Chamber of Commerce's annual State of Oil and Gas Luncheon at the Horseshoe on Wednesday, Booth continued, quote, "What we do is important. What we do raises the quality of life in the rest of the world. What we do addresses problems like the environment," end quote. To illustrate, Booth recounted his experience during an assignment working in a village in Bangladesh. Chevron and some other non-government organizations funded a medical clinic for the village to provide basic medical care, and after a couple of years, Booth said a noticeable improvement in villagers' life expectancy was observed. Quote, "Energy enabled that quality of life," he said. In his experience working in nations like Bangladesh and Indonesia, Booth said he realized that in those citizens, quote, "the desire to improve the quality of life and to have a higher quality of life than when they started is unbelievably strong," end quote. Noting that in India, there are 19 vehicles per 1,000 people and 4 cars per 1,000 people in Bangladesh, he said those citizens want their own vehicles, they want transportation security, and to be able to choose when to come and go, or to travel for education or better jobs, or simply to see family members. Quote, "That huge spirit that wants to improve their quality of life for themselves and their families is an unstoppable force driving energy demand," he said. That growth in demand, combined with population growth, forecast to be up to 10 billion globally by 2040, will continue to be met by oil and gas, he told the audience. And that is where the Permian Basin comes in, and why the crude and natural gas that comes from the region will be vital not only regionally, statewide, and nationally, but globally, Booth said. He cited a forecast from Wood Mackenzie that sees Permian Basin production rising from 4 million barrels of oil equivalent currently to 7 million barrels a day by 2030. The consulting firm also forecasts that Permian Basin production will jump from 20% of all U.S. production currently to 60% by 2030. Meeting that forecast will require significant investment and increase in activity, Booth said. And for all that upbeat forecast, he said the industry still faces headwinds, among them concerns about the industry's impact on the environment, the need to continue driving all emissions lower, water usage, and induced seismicity. Addressing those issues will require operators working with each other as well as service companies and local, state, and federal regulators, he said. Induced seismicity has been an issue in other geological areas, he pointed out, quote, "and they've been resolved every time they've come up by working together," end quote. That teamwork also must be applied to ensure regulatory policies are enacted that actually achieve their goals rather than have unintended consequences. He cited as an example of an unintended consequence limiting access to Permian Basin reserves. The Permian Basin, he said, is a low-carbon basin, and limiting access to those reserves means they will have to be replaced by higher carbon barrels from elsewhere, Permian Basin crude is sent through pipelines primarily to Gulf Coast refineries or through Gulf Coast ports for export to Europe and Asia, or refined into products that are sent to Europe and Asia, he said. Quote, "The Permian Basin powers the rest of the world forward," Booth said. Museum presents Bush's portraits. Former president's art depicts journey of U.S. immigrants. The story was written by J.C. Lewis. The Museum of the Southwest is again showcasing former President George W. Bush's portrait artwork, this time of America's immigrants. This exhibition also features two Midlanders and multiple Texans. This is the second time the museum has served as the inaugural venue for one of former President Bush's exhibitions. Out of many, one, Portraits of America's Immigrants, is a new collection of oil paintings and stories that spotlight the journeys of America's immigrants. Midlanders Bob Fu and Javed Anwar are among the portraits featured in the exhibit. There is also an accompanying app that will lead guests through the stories of each person's portrait. Quote, "On the app, George W. Bush reads a narrative about each subject and each portrait," Museum of the Southwest curator Matthew Ward said. Ward suggests that all guests utilize applications for an in-depth experience. The app can be downloaded by scanning the QR code on posters in the exhibit on the App Store and Google Play. The exhibition also features a wall-sized graphic showing the process and pathways to becoming an American citizen, created by McKinley Loftus. The exhibition also features freestanding doors from Common Ground, which tell the story of a different immigrant and a different part of the American immigration story through videos. There will also be a roundtable on February 8th when former Commerce Secretary Don Evans, Javed Anwar, Ken Hirsch, and Laura Collins will discuss how the exhibit related to immigration and its policies, as well as the impact immigrants have had on the Permian Basin and the United States. More details about the event will be released at a later time. Out of many, one, Portraits of America's Immigrants will be on view until March 20th. Other exhibitions at the Museum of the Southwest. The museum also opened two other exhibitions this week. The Spotlight series will feature contemporary Texas artists. Houston-based artist Malia Gomez is the first artist to be featured. Quote, "She uses light and nostalgia, as you can see with the disco balls, as a way to process trauma and stress in life," Ward said. Continuing the quote, "Her work is about escapism and embracing escapism in a positive way, sort of as a period of incubation before someone is ready to deal with negatives," end quote. A lot of Gomez's work on display was created during the pandemic. Ward said she dove into the past decades like the 60s and 70s, which seems more comfortable and idealized compared to the present day. Her work features disco balls, floral patterns, and neon lights. Gomez will host a workshop in conjunction with her exhibition. The date has yet to be announced. Quote, "Her workshop is going to center around anxiety monsters and creating your own," Ward said. This work actually stemmed from an exercise she was doing in therapy of picturing her anxiety and getting it on paper. End quote. Away from the Earth, the Fort Worth Circle of Artists features pieces by modernists active during the 1940s in Fort Worth. Their work was a contrast to the established school of Texas regionalism. The group was inspired more by the European avant-garde. The group took elements of biomorphic abstraction, cubism, and surrealism to create complex worlds. Quote, "They were largely forgotten after the 1950s until the 1980s, but scholarship recognized that they were doing something very different for the time, he said. Since then, there have been only a couple of shows featuring their work, end quote. The group didn't have a manifesto or set way of working, Ward added. Each artist had their own style, with some being more surrealist and others creating more natural but still cubist pieces. Artists highlighted in the exhibit include Bill Bomar, Cynthia Brantz, Leah Colchi, Kelly Fearing, Veronica Helfensteller, Marjorie Johnson, Flora Blank Reeder, Dixon Reeder, and Broer Utter. Quote, I wanted to showcase these artists because they challenged preconceived notions of what Texas art was in the mid-20th century, Ward said. I wanted to show that Texas was part of the global art movement in her own way. I tracked down some pieces in the collection of the Dallas Art Museum and the Amon Carter Museum, which are now on loan here, end quote. The Spotlight and Away from the Earth exhibits will be on view until April 24th. The Museum of the Southwest is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday and 2 to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Center meets diverse needs of those with language disorder. Intensive therapies help members navigate life with aphasia. The story was written by Iris Foster. Imagine waking up with a headache and not being able to use your phone. That happened to 52-year-old Michelle in July of 2020. The Walmart employee had suffered debilitating strokes in 2015, survived brain surgery, recovered, and returned to work. However, she was not recognizing the letters and numbers on her phone. Another stroke had impacted the left parietal region, her speech center. It occurred after a massage, but no clots were identified by a cardiologist or neurologist. The long-reaching effect was aphasia, a language disorder impacting, to various degrees, the ability to express herself, comprehend, read, and write. Michelle was not alone. Aphasia affects 2.5 million people in the U.S. It is more common than cerebral palsy, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, or muscular dystrophy. In fact, 34% of patients suffering strokes report aphasia. But for her and her three grown daughters, it was 100% life-changing. Fortunately for Michelle, her primary care physician referred her to the Aphasia Center of West Texas. It is the rehabilitation center that provides intensive therapies to help its members adapt communication techniques so they can regain self-confidence and independence. Her primary care provider simultaneously referred her for one-on-one therapy elsewhere to help her work on recovering technical skills like reading and writing. Beth Crawford, speech pathologist and program director, was quick to point out that the Aphasia Center does not compete with other therapeutic services. Quote, we're on a continuum of care, and we want our members to receive that full continuum, she said. Notice the center's use of the term member, because, Beth adds, they're done being patients. Since the fall of 2020, Michelle pays $150 monthly to attend 15 hours of weekly activities at the Aphasia Center, located at 5214 Thomason Drive. The focus is to improve her reading, writing, and conversational skills using a variety of resources, including aphasia-specific computer software. Scholarships are available based on a sliding scale. For Michelle and the other 20 to 25 members, the 7 full-time and part-time staff at the center tailor the research-based life preparation therapies to make them as diverse as members' needs. Beth recalled that past activities have included a Toastmasters chapter, book club, and Bible study. Michelle rides the aphasia center bus with her cohorts Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, and stays from 9 a.m. until 2 p.m. On a typical Monday, she will spend the first hour in a conversation group with staff, sharing with others who range in age from late 30s to mid-90s. Next, she will go to a life participation activity, which runs the gamut from gardening to shop, building birdhouses and trays, or cooking in the center's kitchen. During that time, staff will evaluate each member to determine how communication affects his or her problem. Later that day, members will work to improve those identified issues. On Tuesdays, Michelle and others will focus on skill building. For example, how do they handle situations where they are misjudged? And how do they use gestures to facilitate what they can't communicate? Beth interjects that the public often mislabels folks suffering from aphasia as mentally challenged or intoxicated, especially if they look unimpaired. The center's life participation approach helps members counteract the loneliness, social isolation, depression, and loss of their old lives. Thursdays ends with a Texas Hold'em shootout, which is a rowdy and fun way to conclude a week of services. Wednesdays, Michelle gets one-on-one therapy at West Texas Therapy. To look at her, you wouldn't guess what she's been through. Perhaps she's a little more emotional in talking about the progress she's made, and she often looks to daughter Rochelle for reassurance. Beth recalls that Michelle was initially quiet and withdrawn in group settings. Another partnership the Aphasia Center created, thanks to a grant from the FMH Foundation just before the pandemic occurred, enable members to receive mental health therapy from Centers, the Midland-based counseling center. Michelle utilizes these services twice a month. Discussions about attitudes and identity arise along with talk about how to go forward, living with uncertainty surrounding what caused her last stroke. Her primary care provider has her on medications to help prevent recurrence, but there are no guarantees. In the meantime, daughter Rochelle has plenty of praise for the work of the Aphasia Center. She's also emotional when she recounts that in July of 2020, her mother could just about say one word. By the end of 2020, after 4 months' work at the Aphasia Center and at speech therapy, Michelle had regained a lot of her writing and speaking. Best of all, Rochelle, a banker, said the center provided 3 or 4 sessions, living well with aphasia, for family members to help them cope with life skills and give them supportive conversation techniques to use with her. Now, nearly 18 months later, Rochelle says, quote, "She impresses me with what she remembers, telling me what's happened on the news. I've got my mom back," end quote. Quote, "I think the real magic of this place is what the members are to each other," Beth states. To say they've bonded would be to recount how 7 trained volunteers and staff reacted to COVID. When the center had to shorten hours of operation or when members couldn't attend, activities like old-fashioned letter writing were utilized for those without technology. Zoom sessions were set up for those, like Michelle, with a partner who could facilitate that. Now that the center is back to full operation, quote, "Everybody who comes chooses to be here," Beth says. In order to add beneficial intensive navigational strategies, the Aphasia Center holds fundraisers like its popular Chocolate Decadence Evening, which is Friday at the Odessa Marriott. This year, among the live auction packages, will be 3 that will directly impact what Michelle and her family received. They are donations for utilities, for friends and family support group, and for woodworking shop. For more information about Chocolate Decadence, the center's mission, or the tradition of free summer concerts, please call the Aphasia Center at 432-699-1261.
Hello, this is Michael reading an additional inside story from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Thursday, January 27th. COVID Report. County reports new low in weekday cases, by Stuart Doreen. There are positive trends on the COVID front inside Midland County, according to Midland health officials and the Midland Health Department. First, the Midland Health Department reported there were 197 positive cases on Tuesday involving Midland County residents. That is the fewest number of cases in one day going back to January 8th, and the first time that there have been less than 220 reported on a weekday. The Midland Health Department reports the number of cases across the county dropped to 2,624 last week from 3,214 on January 9th through the 15th, a decrease of 18.3%. There are 757 cases through Tuesday of this week, a pace that would result in the fewest cases of any full week in January. The Midland Health Department has reported 10,570 cases involving Midland County residents this month. Less nurses out. Midland Health COO Stephen Bowerman reported Tuesday there are 39 staff members that were COVID positive on Tuesday. That was down from 56 last week. There are another 50 that were exposed to COVID, down from 70 last week. Bowerman reported the state has sent 27 employees to help the hospital with a high number of COVID patients, 94 total on Wednesday, and its 87.5% inpatient room occupancy rate. Positivity rate is dropping. The Midland Health website is showing that the positivity rate of tests at Midland Health centers is down for the third straight week. Midland Health shows a positivity rate of 42%, which follows rates of 52.1% on the week ending January 8th, 50.7% on the week ending January 15th, and 47.9% last week. The positivity rate has been above 40% for five straight weeks, the highest of the pandemic. Not positive. Deaths are up. The number of COVID-related deaths in January will be the highest since October, according to Midland health officials. The 27 deaths in January involving patients at Midland Memorial Hospital, more than the 21 in December and 15 in November. There have been 160 since the beginning of August.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 27th, 2022. Community Roundup. Meetings. Midland City Council, 8 a.m. Thursday at the Bush Convention Center, 105 North Main. Hospital District, 11:45 a.m. Thursday at Midland Shared Spaces, 3500 North A, number 1100. Event schedule. Generations Luncheon, 11 a.m. Thursday at First Baptist Church of Midland. Disney Princess, the concert story time, 11:30 a.m. Thursday at the Downtown Library. Wagner Knoll 10-year mini birthday party, 4 p.m. Thursday at Bird Box Gifts. Contemporary printmaking, 5:30 p.m. Thursday at the Arts Council of Midland. Wild for Wildlife, Family Science Night, 6:30 p.m. Thursday at the Petroleum Museum. Motown Experience, 6 to 9 p.m. Thursday and Friday at 3211 West Wadley. 7th Annual Permian Basin Mental Health Conference, 8 a.m. Friday at Midland ISD. Playdate, 9 to 11 a.m. Friday at the Museum of the Southwest. Tween Video Games, 4:30 p.m. Friday at Centennial Library. Chocolate Decadence, 6 to 10 p.m. Friday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Cody Jinks, 7 p.m. Friday at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Orientation for LETMN 2022 class, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday at Sibley Nature Center. Create a Bowl with Mike Richardson, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday at the Arts Council of Midland. Introduction to Astronomy, Part 2, Discover the Night Sky, noon Saturday at the Marion Blakemore Planetarium. West Texas Wedding Expo, noon Sunday at the Horseshoe Arena. Building Bots, Robotics and Engineering Fun Lab, 5:30 p.m. February 1st at the Petroleum Museum. Texas Gubernatorial and Attorney General Forum, 6 p.m. February 1st at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. BPW February Business Meeting, 11:30 a.m. February 2nd at Alpha One Guns and Gear. Trey Kennedy, They Are You For Real, The Are You For Real Tour, 7 p.m. February 2nd at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Midland Art Crawl Kickoff Mixer, 4:45 p.m. February 4th at the Second Story Co-working. Los Tres Grandes, Los Huracanes, Primavera y Rielo Rus, 8 p.m. February 4th at La Hacienda Event Center. Low Street Market, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. February 5th at Centennial Park. Symphony Sound Bites, 6 p.m. February 5th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Dancing with West Texas Stars 2022, 6:30 p.m. February 5th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Friends of the Symphony, 7:30 p.m. February 5th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Love and War Party and Drag Show, 9 p.m. February 5th at the Beer Garden. Tickets at www.eventbrite.com/e/244787224177. Beautiful, the Carole King Musical, Broadway in the Basin, 7:30 p.m. February 7th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Dr. Jordan B. Peterson, Beyond Order, 7:30 p.m. February 8th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Dinosaur World Live Story Time, 11:30 a.m. February 9th at the Centennial Library. Disney Princess, The Concert, 7 p.m. February 9th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Wagner Knoll 10-Year Mini Birthday Party at Vintage Deluxe, 4 p.m. February 10th at Vintage Deluxe. Authors at the Ector, Elizabeth Wetmore, 7 p.m. February 10th at the Ector Theater. Mike Ryan with guest Cody Hibbard, 9 p.m. February 10th at Rockin' Rodeo. Chad Prather, 8 p.m. February 11th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Cupid's Arrow Valentines, 8 p.m. February 11th at Woody's Hideaway. Cinderella's Royal Breakfast, 9 a.m. February 12th at Midland Community Theater. Kansas, Point of No Return Tour, 7:30 p.m. February 12th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Galentine's Day benefiting Safe Place of the Permian Basin, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. February 13th at the Selfie Museum. Amanda E. Diego, 8 p.m. February 13th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. City of Midland Career Fair, 3 p.m. February 15th at the Bush Convention Center. The Mavericks, 8 p.m. February 15th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Steve O, 6 p.m. February 16th at the Ector Theater. Motown Experience, 6 p.m. February 17th at the Selfie Museum. Gaither Music Group, 6 p.m. February 19th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Pecos and the Rooftops, 9 p.m. February 18th at Dos Amigos. The Journey, a celebration of Black History Month, 2 p.m. February 19th at the Museum of the Southwest. Wedding Open House, 1 p.m. February 20th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Let's Rock Broadway, 7:30 p.m. February 21st at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Salute, Black and White Ball benefiting Meals on Wheels and additional senior programs, February 24th at the Petroleum Club of Midland. House for Friends for Casa de Amigos, February 24th at Green Tree Country Club. Ron White, 8 p.m. February 25th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Citizenship Fair, 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. February 26th at the Allison Fine Arts Building at Midland College. Wacky Wig Run, 9 a.m. February 26th at Scarborough Sports Complex. America First West Texas Edition, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. February 26th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. UTPB to host two-part art hop by J.C. Lewis. The University of Texas Permian Basin will host an art hop for two parts of the Waterworks exhibit, one on campus and the other at the Ellen Knoll Art Museum. The event will start at 5:30 p.m. Thursday at the Nancy Fife Cardozier Gallery, located behind Stonehenge. The Waterworks exhibit was conceived by community members focusing on water issues in the Permian Basin. Seven artists were selected from a national call. UTPB is hosting the exhibition Waterways, on loan from the Smithsonian Institution's Museum on Main Street program, which is on view until February 23rd.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 27th. Annie Nelson Wright passed away on January 20th. She was a servant of God, a loving mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, great-great-grandmother, and a devoted community member. Annie was born September 6, 1927, in Salt Branch Community, Reagan, Texas. In 1954, Annie took an opportunity in Midland, Texas, as a second-grade teacher. She taught in MISD schools for 31 years and ended teaching at Travis Elementary. She was preceded in death by her parents, David and Etta Nelson, her beloved husband, William Hawitha Wright, and brothers, Troy and Thomas Nelson. She is survived by her daughter, Gwendolyn Wright Colvin, and son, Melvin Wright, along with 4 grandchildren, 10 great-grandchildren, 5 great-great-grandchildren. Siblings: Obley Monroe, Carly Nelson, Mabel Smith, Roy Nelson, Julia Swain, Dorothy Ellis, Emma Threat, and Irma Morrill. Special friend, Hi Halsey, as well as many nieces, nephews, cousins, and friends. The family will welcome guests on Friday evening, January 28th, at a wake from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. A celebration of life service will be on Saturday, January 29th, at 11 a.m. at Greater Ideal Baptist Church in Midland. Guests attending both services are asked to wear masks and social distance when possible. Interment will be at Rest Haven Memorial Park following the services. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. David Blake Anderson, age 36, of Abilene, died on January 20th in Dallas. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, January 27th, at Hamill Family Funeral Home in Abilene. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, January 28th, at First Baptist Church in Abilene. Burial will be at Evergreen Cemetery on Saturday, January 29th at 3 p.m. in Stanton, Texas, with David Harp of First Baptist Church of Stanton officiating. Blake was born in Midland to David and Terry Anderson on December 12, 1985. Blake was preceded in death by his paternal grandparents, R.O. and Allie Anderson, and maternal grandmother, Nelda Turner. Blake is survived by his wife, Clarissa, sons, Jacob, David, and Logan Glenn, brother, Chase Anderson, and wife, Haley, brother, Nathan Anderson, parents, David and Terry Anderson, grandfather, Wade Turner, niece, Keely Anderson, nephew, Rylan Anderson, father and mother-in-law, Doug and Robin Toller, grandfather-in-law, Glennis Hedrick. The family suggests memorials to your favorite charity. Online condolences may be submitted at www.hamillfamilyfuneralhome.com. Willie D. Glover was born January 8, 1936, the fourth child of 16 to Lewis and Pearl Glover in Rodessa, Louisiana. He was raised and attended school in Marshall, Texas. He moved to Midland in 1956 and worked for Midland and Western Fencing Company and met his wife-to-be. On December 1, 1957, he married Helen Marie Sims, and to this union, 2 children were born. Willie is preceded in death by his parents, Lewis and Pearl Glover, a son, Willie D. Glover, Jr., a great-granddaughter, Essence Glover, his brothers, Simi D., Raymond, Jimmy, Lewis, Jr., and Christopher, his sisters, Bertha, May Ola, Juanita, Mary Nell, Loretha, and Addie Fay. He is survived by his loving wife of 64 years, Helen Marie Glover, and children, Janice Glover and Ricky Lee, both of Midland, his siblings, Patricia Anderson, Yvonne Thompson, Thomas Glover Sr., and Willie Melvin Glover, all of Dallas. He is also survived by several grandchildren. Visitation will be held on Saturday, January 29th, from 12 p.m. until 4 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Alma Yolanda Pena of Odessa died on January 20th in Odessa. Funeral services, followed by burial, will be held on January 28th at 10 a.m. at American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Andreas C. Granados, age 45, of Midland, passed away Tuesday, January 25th. Viewing will begin on Sunday, January 30th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. Funeral Mass is set for Monday, January 31st at 10 a.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Arrangements were made with Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. Denise Rackley, age 67, of Odessa, passed away January 24th. Celebration of Life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, January 29th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Glenna C. Scarborough, age 73, of Midland, passed away on January 25th. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 29th, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Shirley Jean Hicks, age 59, of Midland, passed away on January 18th. Services are pending with Jackson Warren Funeral Home.
Good morning. This is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, January 27th, 2022. ODC member demands Thompson resign. Tuesday night's Odessa City Council meeting was over in under 30 minutes, but the most exciting part wasn't even on the agenda. The meeting started out when Odessa Development Corporation board member Chris Crow called on Councilman Steve Thompson during citizen comments to immediately resign from the council. On January 11th, the Odessa City Council voted 4-3 to remove Jeff Russell from the Odessa Development Corporation after Thompson and fellow council member Mary Willis expressed their displeasure about his behavior during a December 8th ODC meeting. According to the pair, Russell participated in discussions about a Rhodes USA proposal at a December ODC meeting, despite telling the chairman he had a business relationship with Rhodes USA. They also said he didn't file conflict of interest paperwork in a timely manner. Both Thompson and Willis said Russell's actions resulted in the appearance of impropriety, and the integrity of both the ODC and the council could be called into question as a result. Russell said he abstained from voting on the Rhodes USA matter because he mistakenly believed Neo Construction and Rhodes USA were affiliated, and he had done business with the former. Russell said he has also since discovered that his business with Neo would not be considered a conflict of interest under the law. Russell further stated he didn't file conflict of interest papers in a timely manner because he had wrongly assumed ODC Chairman Tim Edgman would have told him to, had it been necessary. During the January 11th meeting, council member Denise Swanner, who appointed Russell to the ODC board, tried repeatedly to read a proclamation claiming Thompson himself has twice voted on a matter in which he had a conflict, but she was shut down by Mayor Javier Hoven because Thompson's actions weren't on the agenda. On Tuesday night, Crow told the council they needed to ask themselves if they were ethical leaders or hypocrites before reading a proclamation similar to Swanner's. Both Crow and Swanner contend the city approved a contract for STA benefits in December 2020 and again in December 2021, despite the fact the Texas Secretary of State still lists Thompson as the president of the company. The two allege the contract was unanimously approved by the council in December 2020, but former Mayor David Turner later indicated Thompson had abstained from the vote. They further allege Thompson voted on the contract again in December 2021, despite the fact his son now owns the business and he had a conflict of interest. Crow told the council Tuesday the Secretary of State, LinkedIn, and the Better Business Bureau still connect Thompson to STA benefits, and through Thompson and Willis's word from the January 11th meeting into their face. Everyone throughout these quotes have said honesty and integrity are important, and even a hint of impropriety is not acceptable from this council. However, we have turned a blind eye time and time again to Mr. Thompson and his contract, his family business, Crow said. I call on you, City Council. I call on you, Steve Thompson, to do the right thing, step down, resign from this council immediately. If you're an ethical person and you're not a hypocrite, you will do that for the citizens of this city. Council, if you're ethical, you will publicly voice your opinion that he needs to step down. Citizens of Odessa, I call on you to call on this council and to call Steve Thompson to honor his words. If he is ethical, there is a hint of impropriety here and he does need to step down. After the meeting, Thompson said he would not be stepping down as he has done nothing wrong. He also shared documents he said proves he has acted above board the entire time. Thompson explained STA Benefits has a no-commission consulting agreement with the city of Odessa that requires the company to find the best deals it can when it comes to employees' life insurance, disability claims, accidental death, etc. Under the terms of the agreement, the company is paid an agreed-to fee with the city per covered employee per month. Thompson said STA Benefits was purchased in 2002 by National Financial Partners, but he remained on board under a management contract until he retired in 2015, and his son, Marty Thompson, assumed his role. In December 2020, his son brokered a deal between the City of Odessa and Standard Insurance Company, where the city would pay an annual premium of roughly $155,000 to Standard, Thompson said. His distractors have alleged STA Benefits received a $155,000 contract. But first of all, the $155,000 is the cost of the premiums, and secondly, the contract is with Standard Insurance, not STA, Thompson said. Thompson also provided tax documents showing his son received roughly $28,000 in income from the City of Odessa in 2020, not $155,000. Thompson further explained that in December 2021, the council didn't sign a three-year contract with STA Benefits, as has been alleged. They entered an agreement with Standard Insurance through STA Benefits, locking in insurance rates for 3 years. The city can cancel the contract at any time, he said. The reason his name is still listed as the president of the STA Benefits on the Texas Secretary of State's website is because National Financial Partners has failed to file the paperwork needed to fix it, Thompson said. National Financial Partners has not returned messages seeking comment, but Thompson supplied the Odessa American a letter from NFP confirming Thompson has not been involved in the management of the STA since 2015. Thompson said he provided the city secretary with a letter in June 2021. In addition, Thompson provided the OA with emails between his son and NFP from earlier this month that indicate NFP is working to update its paperwork with the Secretary of State to remove Thompson from its website. As for the LinkedIn account, Thompson said he doesn't have one. He also said he has no idea why the BBB would list him as the owner of STA benefits. Thompson said audio recordings of the December 2020 and December 2021 meetings will prove he abstained from both votes involving STA benefits. In related matters, Swanner's attempt to replace Russell on the board with chiropractor James Kirk failed. Before taking a vote, Thompson announced he wanted to chat with Kirk prior to voting, prompting Swanner to respond, "That's fine, but it's not your appointment, it's mine." When Hoven called for the vote, Thompson voted nay along with Dietra White and Willis, with Hoven, Mark Mata, and Swanner voting yes, and council member Tom Sprawls absent. The motion failed. City Attorney Natasha Brooks said Swanner can place the item on the next agenda. In other matters, the city approved a nearly $7 million 10-year agreement with Axon. The Arizona-based company will provide OPD with tasers, body-worn cameras, helmet cameras, dash cams, and drones. The company will also provide training and records management and evidence management systems. The council also agreed to settle a lawsuit filed by Lourdes Rodriguez against the city for $60,000. Rodriguez was injured when her vehicle and a pickup truck driven by a Parks Department employee collided on October 2017 at West Clements Street and South Kelly Avenue. Water is everywhere. Along with the Smithsonian Waterways exhibit at the University of Texas Permian Basin, there are two other displays at two other locations. The Ellen Noel Museum of Art and Nancy Fife Cardozier Gallery, also at UTPB, are hosting waterworks. Daniel Zeis, curator of the Ellen Noel, said the displays are tied to waterways. The exhibit, Waterworks, was conceived by community members focusing on water issues in the Permian Basin. Seven artists from a larger national call were chosen, a news release stated. UTPB is also hosting the exhibition, Waterways, on loan from the Smithsonian Institution's Museum on Main Street program, on view through February 23rd. Zai said about 70 artists applied from across the country. They ended up with about 200 works, and they selected a small number from that. Artists created tiny paper geodes of lakes from around the world, landscapes in luggage, ceramic replicas of a dam, paintings and flames of dirt, with water running into it from different directions, creating different landscapes. The show will run from Thursday through April 23rd at the Ellen Noel and at the Cardozier Gallery from Thursday through March 1st. Water has always been valued as a precious commodity in West Texas. It has also been an inspiration for artists throughout the history of art. The importance of water has been brought to the forefront to us with the changing climate, Kim said in an email. The selected artists visualize water in many different forms. Some of our artists approach the topic of water from more of a scientific point of view, while other pieces are more playful. This is an excellent opportunity for the community to experience water in many different forms, she added. Zeis and Kim said they have worked on projects together before, but not quite in this way. While we have supported one another in various forms, Kim said, this is the first time since my tenure in 2019 at UTPB that the two art institutions have jointly hosted an exhibition. It's been great fun working with the Ellen Noel, even while curator Zeis and I have to navigate through the recent COVID surge. I have already received a lot of interest regarding the gallery HOP in our community. It would be great to expand upon this opportunity, Kim said. Jess Benjamin is the artist who created the piece Nebraska Dam, which has the look and feel of pieces of a crumbled dam, but it's ceramic instead of concrete or cement. Kathleen Vance created the traveling landscapes, which are described by the website thisiscolossal.com as many ecosystems inside vintage suitcases. Zai said the suitcases have lights in them and a water pump. One piece is a trunk with a dirt canyon inside. Zeiss said art doesn't just have to be pretty subject matter, it can be thought-provoking and point out issues. Daniel Miller, an associate professor of sculpture and intermedia, created Floodworks and other works. In a phone interview Wednesday, Miller said his background is in the arts, but he has always been interested in the sciences. My father was a researcher at Michigan State University in microbiology and immunology, so I always think that there's some relationship there. I had a grandfather who was a master mechanic, so I think sort of family connections that sort of rub off and make themselves evident in my work later on. I went to art school and studied to become a sculptor. As I went through my studies, I became more interested in kinetic art, and that was the end of undergraduate school, which led me to seek out an MFA at the Art Institute of Chicago. I went there for a degree that doesn't exist anymore, but it's called an MFA, in Time Arts, which was between sculpture and performance and sound and video and art and technology, Miller said. Through that experience, I sort of honed my skills and craft and began to understand how to bring robotics and electronics into the art-making process and create experiences, really, with the sculptures that were active and interactive and could kind of unfold before the viewer's eyes as they watched and even participated with the artwork. Miller's work will be at the Ella Noel and Cardozier Gallery. It's always exciting when there's a show or an exhibition that spans more than one space, so I'm always interested in that. But the call for the water show sort of piqued my interest right away because these projects in particular were kind of ideal for that dialogue, whereas these works find themselves in solo exhibitions earlier and international exhibitions in many cases. I'm very interested in putting these in these kind of specific, curated exhibitions which deal with a concept or an idea, in this case around water. All three of these works, in a very intimate way, utilize water and stories about water within them, and how, in most cases, these projects are related to climate change or are something